Welcome to Season 5 of E-Commerce Fastlane. This podcast helps resilient entrepreneurs, marketers, and founders to accelerate growth and thrive with Shopify. And now, on to episode 233.
You're listening to E-Commerce Fastlane, the podcast show to help you build, manage, grow, and scale a successful and thriving company. Powered by Shopify. Listen to real conversations with partners and subject matter experts as they share proven practical strategies, platforms, and the best Shopify apps to help you accelerate your business. The time is now for you to improve efficiencies, grow revenue, profit, and lifetime customer loyalty. Please welcome your host, startup founder, and strategic advisor, Steve Hutt.
Well, this episode is brought to you by Recharge, the leading subscription management solution helping e-commerce merchants of all sizes launch and scale subscription offerings. The subscription market is predicted to grow to nearly $500 billion by 2025. That's a billion with a B. And as the fastest growing area in commerce, subscription holds tremendous opportunities to build a community of customers who share your values. Now, Recharge powers the growth of thousands of subscription merchants and their communities, turning one-time transactions into long-term customer relationships. With subscriptions, merchants are able to experience predictable revenue, increased customer loyalty, and higher average order values. Whether you're a direct-to-consumer business or an omni-channel brand, subscriptions strengthen your brand's relationships with your customers and make it easy for consumers to make repeat purchases. Turn transactions into relationships and experience seamless subscription commerce with Recharge. Get started today with a subscription payment solution trusted by over 45 million subscribers worldwide. You can check them out at rechargepayments.com/Fastlane. Well, hey there, it's Steve Hutt, and welcome back to Season 5 of E-Commerce Fastlane. Now, if this is your first time listening, this is an e-commerce show where we have honest and transparent conversations about building and thriving with your store powered by Shopify or Shopify Plus. Now, if you're an ambitious, lifelong learner, which you likely are since you're here today, you're definitely in the right place. Now, new episodes are available twice weekly with your favorite podcast players like Apple Podcast, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and many more. You can also stream current episodes, including a very relevant back catalog, directly from ecommercefastlane.com. Now, in today's episode, my guest is Peter, who's the founder and CEO of a company called Data Milk, and they're at datamilk.ai. Now, what they are is a no-code UX optimization tool that helps to build, well, I'm going to call it AI-driven UX optimization for Shopify brands. Other CMSs also, but since we're so tight with the Shopify world, that's what we're going to focus on today. Their platform really is a starting point to really help growing revenue really in less than an hour. It's no code, you add it on, there's no technical resources required. It's so interesting because they actually focus more on the navigational cues, which we're going to dig into in a minute, versus maybe other on-page personalization tools that are available out there. It really does optimize this kind of, I'm going to call it the core kind of user experience on a Shopify site, really with the number one goal, just to create the right experience for each user at the exact moment. Like ultimately, we really want to maximize revenue for each visitor or each shopping session that's on a Shopify store. This is what we're going to learn today about what Data Milk can do. So hi, Peter. Welcome to E-Commerce Fastlane.
Thank you, and pleasure to meet you, Steve. Thank you for having me here, and I'm very excited to tell you about Data Milk and generally talk e-commerce.
Absolutely. This is great. Really excited to get this tool. I had a chance to play with it, and I had a couple signature Shopify Plus accounts. I understand we're going to chat about one for sure a little later on in the episode and just see how the tool's actually working. It's quite interesting. I know we're going to unpack a lot about this today, but let's talk a little bit about just the tool itself. I just would like to understand on a high level first, because brands are getting incredible results from it. I mentioned a little bit about what you do, but just it's best in your own words about the Data Milk platform and the problems, just on a high level first, about the problems that you are solving today for Shopify brands.
I guess it's best told from the perspective of a little bit my personal story and what I used to do in my life and how I arrived at this company. So I used to work at Google, and at Google, my job was to optimize Google.com's user experience to make more money for Alphabet, which is the parent company of Google. The way that we did this at Google was actually with a lot of hard work and sophisticated software. So we used to run about 150 A-B tests at the same time on google.com to find the winning ones and then unlock about 6 to 12% extra revenue on an annual basis for google.com. So Google used to do this for 15 years. I was there for 5 years doing it. But if you sum it up over the 15 years, that means close to 100% extra revenue that Google generated from updating its UX, right? So that's kind of the foundation of the story where I got started from. I looked at the department that we had at Google and I realized, well, it's going to be very difficult to scale this type of work to most e-commerce companies that have to deal with a lot more things in their business than just dealing with their UX, right? And from here, sort of the key question that we wanted to answer was, how do we create an alternative path towards producing 150 A-B tests, if you will, and unlocking that value? So that's kind of the foundation of the idea and where we got started from. And the answer, as always in life, tends to be you just have to go through the hard work. You know, you have to walk that hard road to arrive at the right answer. So we didn't really understand e-commerce when we started this business. We said we'll believe the numbers when we see them. We have to try things to learn what works, you know? And so we went and we actually signed up some partners that are quite large who, on our words, believed us that we used to do this at Google and we did it very well. And were nice enough to let us do this work for free on their websites in the beginning. And we started cranking away at A-B tests on the sites, and we must have run a couple of hundred by this point. From here, we were able to derive the type of patterns of things that actually work. That saves a lot of that work and effort and time for other companies that are thinking about what else should I do. Well, we've already walked this path with a bunch of companies, so we can just sort of provide solutions for the particular UX changes that actually drive value and revenue for the next store and the next store that we work with, right? So that's kind of the beginning and how it got started. And the paradigm that you're mentioning, which is basing the UX much more on what the person is actually doing on the site, not even necessarily personalization in its classic way, where you try to figure out, is this a certain demographic that's on the site, or is this someone who's coming from a particular ad? But really focusing in on understanding in real time, what is the intent of the user based on the behavior that they exhibit on the site, you know? And then try to build the site underneath that intent, sort of similarly to how when someone goes to Google, they type in the search result. That is incredibly valuable information to then display the right user experience for that particular search. You can do the same on an e-commerce website, but taking the navigational cues, so the actual behavior of the users, as a cue into their intent. And these kinds of changes work really, really well in making the store ultimately easier to use and perform better for the end user and for the store owner.
So let's jump under the hood a bit. I want to get a little bit nerdy. I think there's going to be certainly a cohort of those that are listening today and saying, okay, well, how does this work? Like, how specifically do these optimization work in real time? You alluded to the fact that we understand maybe the site visitor and kind of what they're doing, maybe their scroll depth, what they're clicking on, and maybe even understanding where the traffic came from. If it was a social ad or if it was a referral link, or it came from an influencer. Who knows? You know. And so you're obviously understanding that, or a type of product or collection of products. It's interesting to me that you have this data available, but then in real time, you're modifying the navigation to tailor towards that specific site visitor, known or unknown. We'll talk about privacy policies in a minute too. I think I'm going to unpack that one too. But I'd like to understand a little bit about how do these optimizations actually work? Like, maybe walk us through that a little bit.
Yeah, great question. Fundamentally, it's a bit of a question about how the browser and the web works in general, right? So for those of you who are running marketing campaigns, you're probably putting a lot of parameters in the URLs, right? And those parameters can immediately be taken as hints to understand where the person is coming from. You know, if you're sending an email to retarget someone, to reignite their journey that they stepped off of, you're going to put a particular parameter in the URL. So that's already information. The browser also collects information about the referrer of the traffic. So Instagram, Facebook, Google will all pass through information into the browser about what the previous page was. So that can immediately be used. But from the very first moment that they land on your site, they are going to be looking at either a collection page, a home page, or a product page, most likely. And from here, you can already infer quite a bit about the behavior of this person, right? If it's someone who's coming back to look at the same product page and they left about a week ago and it was the last product page that they looked at, right? That's probably very high intent person that they actually are thinking about buying that particular product. So that's kind of the depth of information, unlocking it and talking about this in a structured way, right? Because that's how we humans understand it. Of course, the AI thinks about these problems in a much more unstructured way. It unlocks slices and behaviors that we can't even fathom or in some way correlated. But from that very first page that someone lands on, it's very interesting how much information you already have and possess about the user to try to predict what their next step might be. And now take that sort of notion that one page is so much already and multiply it by 64, because we see that it takes about 64 clicks for someone to even get to a point of starting checkout on an average, fairly large store with quite a bit of SKUs. Okay. So people are actually walking very complex journeys through these e-commerce websites to get to a point where they make a decision on what to do. So there's quite a bit of space and unused data that technically you as the store owner own, right? Because these are your users. You probably paid for that traffic to arrive there, right? This is data that you possess and you're not leveraging and using it to then make the user experience of that person better. It's just a loss sort of on both sides.
Let's talk a bit about effectiveness of it, because, you know, you said prior to Google and you know, at any one time, there's, you know, 150 some experiments, A-B experiments going on, and you're going to pick the best ones, and the revenue lift was massive. And so applying that methodology and concepts now over to the e-commerce world, it just, I guess those listening today would say, okay, you know, you have a no-code thing, we turn on data milk, and then it starts doing what it needs to do. How do we know if it's effective or not, if it's actually, you know, because there's always this kind of black box concept, what's going on? And in fact, does it necessarily impact the bottom line? Was it a drop that was different? Did it add a new product or collection to the site that all of a sudden is hotter? There's lots of variables and trends and things that are going on an e-commerce store, seasonality, lots of things to talk about, right? But from your tool's perspective, like, how can you with certainty say, okay, it was turned on, and these optimizations, it worked, and here's why? I'd love to understand that part.
Yeah, that's, again, a very, very good question. We talk to a lot of e-commerce store owners that still operate on this paradigm that I'm going to make some change, and I'm going to look at before and after conversion rate of my website, for example. You have to look at the oscillations of this conversion rate on a daily basis. What you'll find if you look at your store closely is that these numbers can vary by plus minus 50% from every day and every week, you know? So when you're trying to detect a change of a couple of percentage points of increase, you obviously cannot do that this way. You cannot sort of do it in a separate time period. So you have to keep all other variables constant. And how do you do that? Well, you do that actually with classical A-B testing. So at least for our tool, how this works is every time a person arrives on the website, the first thing that happens before any change is made to them is they are assigned to a group, a control or a treatment group. So these could be probably familiar terms for you from like pharmaceutical trials, right? Control, the person sees the original version of the site because all the changes that we call smart components that are applied to the UX of the site are additive in nature. By removing, all what's left is the original site as it behaved before, right? So in the control group, you can say the users will see the original website. And in the treatment group, you will say, I'm going to throw the whole kitchen sink of UX changes that Datamilk predicts will be correct and good for performance at it. And from here, you have two sort of users using the site, two different websites, the original site for one user, and now the upgraded Datamilk smart website for the other user. And you can compare these two groups of users to see which one actually makes more purchases, ends up buying with a higher AOV, ends up generating a bigger gross profit margin, and so forth. And that number is highly reliable. And the way that we prove that, that it is highly reliable internally for ourselves, is we'll frequently run tests where we actually have a control group. And in a treatment group, we also won't do anything. So we're comparing the original site to the original site. And we'll see that the results of the two are correct. So that's what gives us internally the confidence that the tool is correctly identifying that there's an increase in case there's an increase. And this is the number that we derive for the end customer, the store owner. We show them how much more the users of the smart UX site are buying compared to the original site.
Right. It's amazing. What about speed now? Because that's going to be the next comment that people are going to make. A lot of brands are kind of in that migration right now of online store 2.0, kind of a new framework. And then maybe further down the journey is hydrogen and oxygen, kind of our take on headless. And then some people going truly headless, Sell and others that are, you know, doing that sort of thing with Webflow and Contentful and these sorts of sites. So I'm just curious, like, what happens if this is dynamically changing? Because I always think about just, you know, the navigational structure not being hard-coded, but kind of it statically stays where it needs to be based on setting up menu hierarchy. You're suggesting that your tool kind of negates a lot of that in some cases, certainly in the A-B test side of the business. Maybe just walk us through kind of what you've seen from a speed. Is there any speed issues at all by dynamically changing something versus what's, I guess, built into a theme maybe on the online store 2.0.
Yeah, so here again, we have to talk a little bit about the specifics of how the browser works to understand this. The end result is that, of course, if the site was being slowed down, you would notice it on the performance of the site from a financial perspective, right? The final metric that matters is the site making more money as a result of that change? Even if it is a little bit slower, if it is making more money, that's good for the end user as well, right? But let's set this aside and talk about the technology a little bit. So the way that the browser typically works is it can open a lot of connections at the same time to download different resources. And so as long as the connection doesn't clog up, that it's open to Datamill, any sort of other important resources that have to load before it, the site loads on its own. And on the side, the Datamill does its job really, really quick and sort of loads in addition to that something else, right? So the job is to not block the existing behavior of the site. And you do that in two ways. One is you tell the browser, hey, this is not as important as the rest of the things that the site should load, right? So why don't you do those things first? And then when you have a little bit of resource for me, load Datamill. Yeah, that's what the asynchronous tag does in the browser world. The second thing that is a bit of our advantage is that we build a lot of our technology on the same stack that basically Google uses for search. And in the search world, every single millisecond is worth so much money. The fact that we're able to basically sidestep a lot of architectural problems that other stacks have by basically building on the fastest possible cloud infrastructure allows us to be really, really quick. Therefore, the speed impact of Datamill on the site is not at all noticeable and is majorly surpassed by the advantages that the user experience gets. And as a result, that is reflected on the financial performance of the software.
Right. All right, very cool. Thanks for sharing that. I was just curious on that. It was more of a side note. I want to talk a little bit about maybe competitors in the space. I mean, I'd argue that maybe you're getting first mover advantage, maybe in this space, which is interesting to me. That's kind of why I have you on the show today. But I think maybe, unfortunately, this podcast is going to help that education component. I don't want you to get lumped into kind of like an on-page personalization tool because there's lots of legacy partners kind of in that space that are doing extremely well, but they don't do what you're doing specifically. They're using other signals, maybe from a merchandising perspective and a recommendation engine and these sorts of things, you know, pre and post purchase checkouty things that are interesting that certainly affect the bottom line too. So those are, you know, I'm not saying they're not useful tools, but just, I guess when you do a quick search, you go to the Shopify app store or you go to Google and, you know, there are some notable peers there that have something to do with improving the conversion rate or, you know, lifetime value, average order value. There's always some kind of like a hack or tool or process in place that people want to implement or are willing to try. I think Datamill is uniquely siloed in its own little area, doing its own little thing, a little bit uniquely different than everyone else. But I just would like to understand a little bit more about specifically, in your own words, I guess, about how you differentiate from others in the Shopify ecosystem.
Yeah, it's also a very, very good question. And, you know, we've been talking to the partnership team at Shopify and trying to figure out exactly which category.
I bet.
Isn't it difficult?
I know, it would be.
But here's how I think about this. I actually think in terms of a metaphor, which is a real estate one. You got to think of your site as a real estate game. You can basically break down the website by value of each sort of UX feature. The burger menu gets this portion of your revenue uses it, right? Search bar, this portion of your revenue uses it. The product page, this portion of your revenue uses it. The checkout, this portion of your revenue uses it. And you can get quite deep, right? And down to the minutiae of every single detail on the page. You should assume, and this is what practice shows from many, many years of optimizing Google, is that every single little part can be somehow made better. And so we have the, I would say at this point, 100-pound gorillas in the room, which are our search and product recommendations, right? At this point, if you don't have those, I think you're not running a serious e-commerce shop in any sort of way. I mean, it's like the basics. It's been proven by the market. It works. It works really, really well. I don't know which vendor you should use for it, but you should go and get that for yourself immediately if you don't have it.
I've definitely interviewed most of them on this show. So just go to the back catalog. You'll find all the ones on search and on page optimization for sure.
But if you take this thought that, okay, search is worth what, 15% for you, you know, and product recommendations, another 15%. But the total should be above 100%, right? Where's the rest of the 70%? And it's scattered around these opportunities on the rest of the real estate of your site, you know? So the truth is that you should be doing a lot of these things. You should be doing anything and everything that gets you closer to your revenue targets every year. And UX is probably going to be one of the most powerful levers. So don't stop at search and product recommendations. Go further, you know? That should be the main takeaway. And from our perspective as a company, we exactly want to position ourselves that way. We want to deliver unique UX improvements that we call, again, smart components. As long as we are making smart components that you cannot find anywhere else, we as a company are going to be very powerful and useful to the world, you know? So that's kind of the strategy that we're taking.
All right, perfect. So I want to talk a little bit about maybe a strategy or a tactic that you can share. I mean, you have a lot of kind of real world experience from the A-B testing side on Google, but now heavily involved in commerce. I know you have quite a few notable partners on Shopify that are using your tool right now with wild success. I'll get into their story in a couple of minutes here. Don't put you on the spot here. Love to hear more specifics about this particular brand, but just from your 30,000 foot view, like, you know, let's say a brand really wants, I'd say they have a pulse on retail and e-commerce and they understand direct-to-consumer strategies and they're listening to this episode right now and going, huh, dynamic kind of UX improvements that's, you know, guaranteed to kind of, you know, based on the right size of the brand that you can make a measurable impact on their bottom line. That's very interesting and compelling, honestly. When I hear that, I'm merchant success team members, so I'm a trusted advisor. I'm trying to help brands to, you know, profitably grow their revenue or, you know, improving efficiencies and lifetime loyalty and these sorts of things, right? When I hear about your tool, I'm like, wow, okay, this is so unique and different. And so I'd love to understand kind of how your brain ticks a bit about navigation and just if there's any strategy or tactic that you could share maybe with some of our listeners. These people are really eager to move the needle in their brands. They want to grow their businesses. They could already be at $10 million. They could be at $5 million. They could be early stage. Who knows? The reality is all brands want to continue moving the needle up and to the right. And so I'd love to hear what's on your mind today about what sort of things brands should consider to get that needle moved.
Ultimately, I'm a big believer in data. And that's why the company is called Data Milk as well. There's got to be a lot of creative ways left out there to leverage the data. So one example that we see connecting to that in the world of navigation can be drawn from something in the fashion industry, actually, that's been propagating quite much, which is this concept of fast fashion, right? Where basically, if you're not familiar with this, brands are really producing sort of a limited amount of various products. And then really closely observing actually what sells and connecting that trend all the way to even their manufacturing facilities so that they can push up the production and manufacturing of the items that suddenly start selling, because you can never tell what the sudden trend will be. Some influencer may go on the red carpet and wear a particular color of something, right? It's an unexpected coincidence in the world that makes that color of things suddenly take off. And you cannot predict that. And actually, big fashion houses have known this for a very long time. And what they do is they produce all kinds of fashion lines of different colors and different materials in advance. And they sit and they wait until the right moment to release those, right? What this sort of paradigm means in today's world is that we need to be very, very quickly reactive to changes in consumer behavior, right? And we need to propagate that using the data of the consumer behavior into all of the systems related to the e-commerce strategy. And if you can do that, you can run a really, really lean operation in terms of costs and at the same time produce maximum sales. And I think that's the angle that really works for us in UX today as well. We observe what people are doing and we're very, very quickly reacting and making the site's UX reflect those trends. So when it comes to that burger menu, right? If suddenly something starts taking off on your site, you want to start promoting the hell out of that category of product, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Because you know it's working. Now you know? And how long is it going to take you with a manual process to recognize that? And we talk to some companies that literally employ someone to sit on Google Analytics and once a week pull these reports to then move the categories around. That is obviously not a scalable approach.
No.
It's a manually error-prone approach. But the idea is good, you know, but the execution, not so much. So that's why I'm a big believer in data, because I believe that you cannot predict in advance what will happen in the world. I mean, I certainly cannot predict what will happen to me in an hour from now, you know? So similarly, we should just be very good listeners in life. And for the company, that means listening to the behavior of their customers and reacting to it as quickly as possible.
Yeah, love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Okay, thanks so much for sharing that one. This is the story part of the episode now. I just feel that people resonate when they hear a story about a brand that uses a particular piece of software or technology. And, you know, like, where were they before Data Milk? What happened when they implemented it? And then looking at the other side, what was the end result and the ongoing relationship? So I have a couple in mind, but I'm going to throw it back to you. I did some kind of internal research before our recording today, but I'm going to throw it back to you. If you can maybe share one brand, notable brand that, you know, that we're both partners with, or Shopify, you know, plus brand with, you know, all the tech stacks that, you know, that they have to run their store. They also have Datamill running too. So I could, maybe you can share just what specifically, what motivated them kind of in their current process, I guess, to now becoming a Datamill customer.
One of our flagship customers is also one of Shopify Plus's flagship customers, Culture Kings. Very, very interesting story of a company in general and how they brought a unique story and merchandising strategy to the e-commerce world. Very much aligned with this fast-paced moving internet paradigm that random things take off, like Netflix episodes that Netflix series that no one would ever think would become big 3 years ago suddenly become the sensation of the world. And who knows how that happens. And you can ride those waves on the product merchandising strategy. And they do a really, really good job at that. And it's an excellent sort of business idea. I'm really fascinated by all of these businesses. It's so cool, the types of depth that you can create and ideas in making businesses. And then they run a really, really lean technical operation, you know? So just to highlight the benefit of Shopify here, I mean, you're running a gigantic business, you know, I'm not going to quote numbers, but a really, really large business with a couple of technical people. That would be impossible 10 years ago. And they got to focus on the uniqueness of their business, right? Because the uniqueness of their business is identifying these consumer trends and really producing goods that ride that wave as quickly as possible. So it's awesome that they get to focus on what they're great at, you know, while Shopify is providing a lot of the technology. Yeah, but that also means they didn't have time for UX. And so when we talked to them, they got interested in, okay, well, that may be true, that I have more money in my user experience than I thought. So let's give these guys a chance to try to unlock it, you know? And that's kind of how the partnership started. And we worked quite a bit on their side, and we tried a lot of different things until we arrived to the current set of things that are working really, really well. And now we're producing amazing numbers for them. And really, if you talk to their team to this date, what they like about it the most is how minimal of resources it requires for them to work with us, because ultimately our solution is so easy to install. And it's so easy to make these UX changes that actually drive value that they end up sitting back and benefiting from it and focusing again on their core business, the same way that a lot of things Shopify is handling for them that they don't have to ever think about, you know? So it's yet another similar solution, but with a very much UX focus. So I think we're aligned with Shopify's thinking here that everyone should specialize in the world on the thing that they're best at. And for us, we're UX and data nerds, you know? So we're happy to come into your business and give you that expertise and provide our software to unlock similar results.
It's interesting. When I went to Datamilk, went to the website and looked up, I was hoping you were going to bring up the Culture Kings ones. I saw that. There's a few others on the website too, but you know, some of the public numbers that you're able to share here was, you know, their ROI was, you know, an 8X, and you know, they had a 7% lift in gross profit, all because of your application running real time on their site. And I think that's pretty impressive results, you know, for a very small amount of money for your platform in exchange for the incremental lift that happens like in real time. And so it's pretty exciting that that's kind of numbers that they're able to experience. So
yeah. And furthermore, basically the way that we set up the billing for our tool, we want to earn the money that you'll pay us before you have to pay us. You know, that's really the most important thing here, that you're basically paying Datamilk with extra profit that you earn. And we can statistically 100% prove to you that that money is in your bank account already by the time that you send a wire to Datamilk. So that obviously really, really helps them with their cash flow as well. And we're happy to power amazing creative entrepreneurs like them a little bit of extra powder to build even more cool things.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Well, Peter, we are nearing the end of the show for today. I know we can probably chit-chat a lot about this. I feel so blessed that I had the opportunity, number one, to be able to kind of share this a little further out in the Shopify world. I mean, some 15,000 some people likely listening to this episode today. And it's just like, I'm hoping it really just sheds some light, put some light on this topic that, you know, there's more, you know, you need to have the basics, as you said, the table stakes of search and merchandising tools running. But man, this is like another part of that overall revenue lift opportunity. Is I think there's money being left on the table. It's very clear. And Culture Kings prove that fact, your tool. And so that's pretty cool. I'd love to understand a little more about, before we close off for today, about what the future holds. You know, I don't know if you're able to share, maybe not show your public roadmap, but maybe a North Star. Like, how is the rest of 22 going to unfold now or beyond for Datamilk? And like, how are you going to continue to offer value and assistance for brands that are really trying to unlock some of this missing UX? And is there any other, like, I don't know, like partnership arrangements or other, I don't know, innovation? I'm just curious on kind of what you have planned that you can kind of publicly share.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So there's two levels of thinking that I can share on this question. The first one is a little bit going back to the real estate paradigm that I mentioned. There's much more than that 7% in the UX of even Culture Kings, you know? So we are continuing to work away, hack away as much as possible and unlocking even more value. My estimate is that there's 10 times more in there. Okay. So we're going to keep working on getting that for every, that's one level. But the second sort of level of thinking generally boils down to, we now live in an incredibly data-rich world, and we don't have enough use cases for this data, and most people don't know how to leverage this data to their benefit. And not just leverage it to their benefit, but do it in a sustainable, and we didn't get to talk about privacy, but this is one of the points. You have to do it responsibly, right? You have to use data in a responsible way. We've seen a lot of companies in the world that have used it irresponsibly. And ultimately, that actually makes our lives as humans worse on this planet, okay? So we are in the business of leveraging data to make good out of it in the world. And in this case, we're making the UX easier to use and generate more money for the store owner. But there's many other ways that we can leverage AI and data to improve this world of commerce. You know, so as a company, Datamilk will continue to focus to create unique solutions for how to leverage the data with the use of AI to create benefit for both the store owner and the end user.
So where should the listeners go if they want to learn more about Datamilk? Is there any kind of resources that you would like to share today?
Yeah. So I think we're going to have a specific page that people can land on, the listeners of the show. We are quite selective with the customers that we work with today, but with the customers that we feel certain that we can very quickly generate results for, if you just come and sign up, we're actually happy to waive our typical $10,000 setup fee because we're so certain in our results and we're very appreciative of this opportunity, Steve, and being on the show.
My pleasure. So I'll guess what I'll do, I'll update the show notes. So we'll send people to a couple different places. One, datamilk.ai is going to be like, the, I guess, the main URL to learn more. Do like your blog, by the way. I'm going to have to, I see there's a few posts in there now. And I even read, actually for recording today, I even read the article over at CEO World. We were talking about, you know, why is now the time to invest in e-commerce menu navigation? So I'll make sure I put a link to that, which just came out recently too. I think March 9th, actually. So it's actually less than a week ago. It was a good little article. And it kind of summarizes some of the things that we were talking about today about how to use data to your advantage and the fact that you really do have an emerging tool that's very unique. Thank you for coming on the show. I do really appreciate that. I believe that there is some opportunity. I'll have a landing page set up to release this episode on the show notes page. It'll be ecommercefastlane.com/Datamilk. And that'll go to a landing page on Datamilk. And then we can talk about that opportunity, getting a demo, seeing if you're a good fit. Thank you for, you know, potentially waiving that onboarding fee. I think it's very interesting for the right brand that really is at scale and really wants to maximize their return on investment. They want to increase their revenue. There's a lot of stuff that's just, I know, is missing. With no one doing this, hopefully, you know, I get the opportunity to share this out into the wild further and you get first mover advantage. Culture Kings and others have proven the value of the tool, and hopefully others listening today, they can also get value from what you're building. I just wanted to thank you so much for coming on the show. You know this, but Shopify has a mission. And it really is to make commerce better for everybody. And, you know, for me, from listening to this episode, it's very clear that Datamilk, you and the whole team, you really are in tight alignment. You really do want to help Shopify brands to, you know, grow revenue through improving these UX experiences. So pretty exciting. So thank you for giving back to the ecosystem. And thanks for building an incredibly impactful product. So
thank you for having the opportunity to speak to you and present it.
All right. Have yourself a great day.
You as well.
Today's episode is brought to you by Recharge, the leading subscriptions payment solution for Shopify brands. Thousands of merchants use subscriptions powered by Recharge to grow their business and their communities by increasing average order value, reducing churn, and providing predictable recurring revenue. Turn transactions into relationships and experience seamless subscription commerce with Recharge. You can check them out today at rechargepayments.com/Fastlane. Well, that's it for today's episode. I'd like to thank you, a loyal listener of eCommerce Fastlane. It's my hope that this podcast is offering you a ton of value through growth strategies, tactics, and exclusive insider tips on the best Shopify apps and marketing platforms, all with my personal goal to help you build, launch, grow, and scale with Shopify. Thanks for investing some time today and listening to the show. I'm so proud and excited that you have a growth mindset and are a constant learner. I truly appreciate you and your entrepreneurial journey. Enjoy the rest of the week and keep thriving with Shopify.